Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Fulpen as we talk about things that relate to this the football side, or the business side of football. As always, we have Neil Stratton here with me, and we're going to get right into it in regards to a lot of news and stuff. We haven't been on the air for the last couple of weeks because of different scheduling issues, but we're glad to be back. And, Neil, how's it going?
It's going great. It's good to be back and eager to get to dig right in again. There's been a lot that's going on. And as you know, Justin, though there's not football in the field, there's still a lot going on really year-round these days in the NFL.
For sure. And, you know, to kind of obviously some news and notes to kind of start the show off, National Blesso, you know, we've talked about that, those two scouting services. They both had their meetings here in the last couple of weeks. You know, like we had talked about, you know, off the air, we haven't heard a ton about that kind of stuff, but it is something that people will be looking for here as we roll into summer regards to the spring grades there. But one thing that we kind of wanted to talk about was something that's come out the last, you know, week, I guess, regards to, you know, and Brett Bielema after the Arkansas head coach after the draft and some of his guys didn't get drafted as high as he thought in regards to the underclassmen. But what he and Nick Saban have talked about, and this was as early as this week, Tuesday, was regarding to policy changes in regards to the underclassmen early entry into the NFL draft. Now, as we've seen, the NBA had their combine here a couple of weeks ago, and they have allowed guys, college players, to enter, kind of test the waters, as they say, not sign with an agent, go through their combine, you know, combine there, and then be able to pull themselves out in regards to if they have talked to you know, NBA scouts and different things like that and say, hey, you know, where are they going to get drafted? If they're not going to be a first round pick, then, you know, they might pull themselves out and go back to college there. Again, they had to not sign with an agent there and be able to kind of go through the process there. This is something that, you know, Bielema and now Nick Saban has jumped on the train. And obviously Nick Saban is a huge, you know, mover and shaker in the football industry. So maybe this has a little bit of legs. Obviously, the NCAA has allowed it with college basketball, and now maybe they can push it to college football. I think that's you know, an interesting thing there. Neil, kind of what's your initial thoughts in regards to kind of reading that article on NFL.com and the other things that's kind of come around there?
Well, it's a really pregnant topic, and there's a lot of ways that you can look at it. I think one. There are two things that I think that are really prominent. Number one, I don't know that what works for basketball here would work for football, given the way that recruiting operates and the timeline, et cetera, et cetera. You know, basketball has a much later draft, and the whole preparation and season for it are a little different. It's kind of post when college teams like to have their spring football and what have you. And I think it's a little more difficult given that a college player, if they want to be part of the all-star process and what have you, now obviously juniors aren't necessarily usually part of that, but they want to go to the combine, they want to do all those things, they've got to make a much quicker decision. And it's got to be, they essentially have to be ready to make that decision when they walk off the field if they want to get their training in and be ready for the pro days and what have you. So the timing of it, I think, is difficult. I think another issue that a lot of people don't understand is that college coaches, excepting maybe a Nick Saban who's got extensive NFL experience, most college coaches have no idea how the NFL draft process works. They don't understand how to responsibly hire an agent, and they don't understand about combine prep, and they don't understand, I mean, they may have a general understanding of pro days, but they don't really understand who goes to the combine and why, and they don't understand when the invitations come out. And that's one thing that I guess I kind of took for granted when I first got into this business, was that everybody knew how everything worked, and everyone on the college side understood the NFL side and vice versa, and that's not true. And because these coaches are so ill-informed, they have a they can't really make the recommendations and give the advice and counsel that you might expect. And so you wind up getting a lot of parents and players that are really in the dark about the process, and they have to make their best guess. Obviously, the NFL has its review board that tries to give players a good idea of where they're going to fit, but at the end of the day, the NFL draft is really a mystery even to people that work for NFL teams, and there's so many different factors and so many different things that you're looking for, and unless you are a lock to go in the top 100 picks, after that it's really kind of a gamble, and I don't know that you can ever fully quantify and tell people exactly where they're going to go in the draft, and until you can do that, it's always going to be fraught with uncertainty. And I know you've dealt with kids that are trying to make that decision on whether or not they want to leave or if they want to stay, and I worked with one such young man this year and kind of tried to steer him in the right direction, and he came back with a grade where he looked like he would go in the first three rounds, and his quarterback was leaving and his coach had left, and I think he had made progress towards his degree and he was on track, but he wasn't going to graduate, but that was really the only thing left for him. And it looked like a good decision to go based on the grade that he got back, and yet he went undrafted. And I feel terrible that I told him I thought it was a smart move, but again, all the ingredients were there. Would a player like that have benefited from something like this? Yes, probably. But I think in the vast majority of cases, I don't know. I just think most players are going to leave early. I think there's one other consideration. I think that they've talked a lot about, hey, there's a lot of players that would might graduate, may stay in school and continue and finish their degree. I don't know that that's true. I think that sounds great on paper or in theory, but my experience has been most of the players that go in, that wind up in this situation where they leave early, in all candor, they're not there for education anyway. There may be a couple that would whose degree would be saved, but that would probably number in the less than 20%, maybe even less than 10%. There's just not many players that are that focused on the NFL, in my experience, that are really students first and athletes second. I hope that doesn't sound too cynical. I just think that's the real world.
Yeah, I think the standpoint of, you know, I agree with all your points there. My thing would be, hey, what to be able to make this work in regards to the college recruiting and different things like that would be having to move up the NFL Combine sooner. I think if you could move the NFL Combine to basically right after the Super Bowl, you move it up 3 weeks to, you know, right after, you know, kind of that Super Bowl there, so that kind of that week, you know, February, you know, 7th, you know, 8th, 9th, so, you know, somewhere in that kind of that, you know, time frame. I think then, okay, obviously, you know, those they could test their, you know, the waters, and again, we're talking about, you know, maybe per team, you're talking about two or three underclassmen that maybe test the waters that come back. So the Alabamas, the Michigans, the Florida States can hold back, you know, a scholarship or two, or tell maybe one of the lower level guys, hey, we'll you know, gray shirt you if so and so comes back, you know, we're gonna gray shirt you. If somebody, you know, doesn't come back, we, you know, we'll look to give you a scholarship there. I think it could work there. I know that they did talk about a couple of years ago about moving the combine to kind of that right after the Super Bowl there, and be able to, you know, kind of push, you know, different things there. And I think that could work there, just on the standpoint of, hey, you know, what only thing it hurts is the cottage industry that's popped up probably in the last 15 years, and that's, you know, the training industry. It hurt those guys, you know, their business, but everybody else, you know, I mean, it helps everybody else. It hurts the cottage industry in regards to the trainers there, you know, in regards to, hey, you know, far as combine prep stuff there. And then you could still, you know, keep the pro days at the same dates and different things like that, and, you know, keep kind of the timeline there. But you do are able to give some of these guys, where there's 30 guys that declared that didn't get drafted, does help, some of those guys aspect there. So I do think that when you've got two SEC coaches and Brett Bielema and Nick Saban pushing for reform, and the SEC, we know, kind of drives, stirs the drink in regards for the NFL. A ton of the players that are in the NFL are from the SEC. I think that standpoint of, we could see something going on here, as we kind of, move there. Now, it could just be talk, but I think when you have Nick Saban kind of come out there and, him have proponent for change, and as well then Brett Bielema, who was at Wisconsin and has had some, a lot of success with his guys at Wisconsin and now guys at Arkansas getting in, NFL opportunities there. I think, we could see something that, could actually be not just, fodder here for the newspaper.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think two more points to make. Bielema and Saban are probably two of the more progressive coaches when it comes to the NFL. They're not afraid to talk about it with their players. Now, that's partially because they are regularly turning out NFL prospects. But the Idahos and the, maybe the Rices and the programs that send players sometimes but that aren't regular NFL factories, this is not a priority for them. And so, maybe two SEC coaches can drive this kind of issue, but I think it's going to take a little while for it to really catch fire across other college programs. Bielema is interesting because he really goes out of his way to talk to his players and kind of get them prepared and know where they're coming from. And Saban, obviously, with all of his NFL ties, has done the same. And so they're a little bit special situation, and this is great fodder for media days and what have you that are coming up. However, second point, I think for something like this to really take hold, the NFLPA is going to have to take a central leadership position in all of this. And I think in the past, the NFLPA's main point when a school asked them to come in is to basically say, hey, don't come to the NFL unless you're absolutely sure you're coming, which I think is probably responsible. But I think they're going to have to be a lot more nuanced about it if this is going to take place, and they're really going to have to offer a realistic portrayal of things, and they're going to have to understand the elephant in the room, which is, hey, a lot of these players stand to make a lot of money. They're already kind of have a professional mindset even when they're in college. And they're going to have to accept that there is some risk in this, and they've got to be able to talk about the fact that, hey, you're a young man who's got special talents, and this is the one chance you have to really make your family whole financially, and there are going to be some players that are going to come out for that very reason. And I think given the fact there's a lot of money to be made, it's hard to kind of second guess them. So difficult topic, very complicated issue, a lot of things a lot of ways you can look at it, and certainly an interesting one. And it'll be interesting to see how it develops from here on.
For sure. And just, basically when you're talking about when these guys go in and say, hey, they want to get their draft grade, they're not getting it from the horse's mouth per se. These aren't, these aren't GMs that are telling them. So that's the only point I could say is that, hey, if they're actually being able to, as far as, get evaluated by GMs and different things like that, and then the GM says, these 32 GMs come and say, tell this player, you're going to be a PFA, you're going to be a seventh round type, grade there, maybe then they go back. Because in regards to the advisory committee, these aren't active, GMs that are there, they're evaluating on that standpoint there. So it's definitely something that's, interesting and potentially, could have a big impact on the NFL draft, but we'll see, kind of how everything plays out there. Moving on to, kind of the movement of the NFL draft and different things like that. It looks like Philadelphia will possibly be, the draft position for next year. But now we have, as far as scouts that move on after the NFL draft, and Neil does a great job at Inside the League to kind of track that there. It has a great blog that came out just this morning in regards to who gets hired as an NFL GM there at succeedinfootball.com. So check it out there. Talks about a lot of different things regards to age factors, experience factors there, and we've seen a lot of guys getting, you know, GM's jobs there. But what, you know, here that you've been tracking regards to kind of the scouts movement there, what have you seen and what kind of trends have been going on here this offseason after the NFL draft?
Well, for the most part, you're seeing the scouting community get a little younger, I think. More teams are tending to hire from within rather than go out and look outside for scouts that have been doing this and have worked for other teams and have a significant body of work. And I think more and more, I think teams are starting to look to try to train their own guys. And this is going to sound kind of odd, but I think experience almost becomes a negative for a lot of the more seasoned scouts that have been doing this, because NFL teams, I think, are becoming a little bit more proprietary, for lack of a better word, about how they want their scouts to operate, and they are looking for maybe a little bit less when it comes to insights and true evaluation in the manner that we've thought of in the past. You're looking for more scouts that are just going out and following orders and coming back with facts, and less that are going out and saying, well, hey, here's a guy that can do this, this, and this, but maybe can't do this, this, or this. They're looking to make that evaluation in the central office at the director level. And as you know, Justin, scouts have been doing this for 10 years, 20 years, what have you, on the road. They're more akin to know what they're talking about. They're going to be more apt to want to talk about why they like this player or they don't like this player. And it seems like, based on the hiring processes these days, fewer teams are looking for that from their scouts. They're just looking for them to go out and gather the information and make fewer determinations about the actual validity of a player as, you know, as an NFL draft prospect. There's so much cross-checking now done, and so many scouts at the director level that kind of go and review the work that's done at the ground level, that I guess most teams feel like they've got the decision-making well in hand. They just need someone to go out and really grind and go to all the schools and come back with the tough stuff that you can only get from being on site and having, you know, boots on the ground, so to speak. So I think, you know, if I were a young man who really desired to get in the scouting community, I might be a little bit, for that reason, I might be a little bit encouraged, because if you go and you can make it into the personnel department of a major school like a UCLA or an Alabama or somewhere along those lines, which are two schools where kids have been hired lately as scouting assistants, and you can really go in and make traction, then I think you've got a better chance of being hired as a scouting assistant, and you've got a better chance to be on path to be one of those road scouts. And once you've been a scout, then you have a much better chance of getting to the director level, and then from the director level, obviously the GM's chair, which is kind of what, you know, everyone would love to do. It's kind of like real-life fantasy football. So I think that's kind of where the league's going, and that seems to be where the decisions are made. The other point that I'll make, without being this too much, is more and more teams, I think, are devaluing the value of scouts, and they don't see them as necessarily a critical part of the operation, and they feel like there's always someone they can cut who's making a salary that is not warranted, and they can replace them with someone younger. And I guess that's always true in any business. The teams are always looking to get younger. But it seems like their coaching staffs are expanding, scouting staffs are contracting. So I guess those are a few insights kind of on the game and how they go, at least at the scouting level, not necessarily at the GM level, which is more what we talk about in today's blog post.
Yeah, and what in regards to, I guess, scout-wise there, you know, like you said, they're as far as getting younger and they're kind of devaluing there. Do you think that is because of the way that the GMs are going now? And like you had, you know, far in the blog post, you think this is coming from the GM level? You think this is coming from the ownership level? You know, why do you think that this is coming that way?
Well, generally because it's the – right now, the Patriots brand is the strongest brand in sports, and that's one of the things we talk about in the blog is that everyone's looking for the next Bill Belichick, or everyone's looking for the next Bill Parcells, or whatever, however you want to describe it. That everyone sees that model as successful. And typically, I mean, in general, I don't want to be too broad here, but in general, the Patriots are looking for someone to go out and gather all the information, the numbers, for Bill Belichick so he can make decisions. And that's kind of how things have been run. And even though that model hasn't necessarily been successfully duplicated in other NFL front offices, i.e. Scott Pioli in Kansas City and some other cases, everyone is still looking to try to figure out how to kind of reinvent that success that's happening in New England. And so they go in and they, whether you have a strong GM or a strong head coach who's kind of got the New England pattern of things down, then you look for them to really make the decisions and get, just, I guess, more scouts to go out and just simply gather information and gather facts. I think a closer example of that is what you're seeing in New Orleans, where Sean Payton is a guy who obviously worked under Parcells, not a Belichick guy, but he has kind of understood maybe the New England way and some of those insights. And Payton's really kind of got the iron in the draft room, and he's making a lot more decisions and has a lot, maybe a higher profile perhaps than GM Mickey Loomis. And I know they work together. I'm not trying to throw Loomis under the bus. But I think, again, more and more you're looking for that one strong decision maker who gathers all the facts, or has someone else gather the facts, and he's kind of got them at his disposal, and then he goes from there. And I think more and more teams are saying, hey, it is a copycat league, and we hear that all the time, and I think that's what we're seeing there. One more point, Green Bay and Seattle have also had a lot of success in the draft and have been excellent franchises over the last 5 to 10 years, but their brand isn't as strong. And I'm not sure why that is, because you're just not getting as many apples picked from the Seattle / Green Bay tree, the Ted Thompson, Ron Wolf tree, perhaps as you might expect. It's still stronger at the director level, but you're just not seeing the GMs come from there. And I think that's something that is partially due to the fact that Seattle and Green Bay have been a little bit more apt to close ranks and not allow their guys to get out. But maybe it's also because teams just, they're not necessarily winning, haven't had the success with regard to the Super Bowl over the last 10 years that the Patriots have, and so everyone wants to continue to try to become a little Patriots light team.
Yeah, I think you're right there, and it's something that, hey, people should go read that blog in regards to who's getting hired as an NFL GM there. I think it's an interesting read, and something that the standpoint there is going on there. One last thing that's kind of, gone over national news, and obviously was breaking last week there, and that's the Baylor situation. Obviously, Art Briles, he's been released to his job. The chancellor, the president, everybody there. Now the standpoint is these 2016 recruits who signed letters of intent. Are they going to be allowed to get out there? Obviously, you're not that far from that situation. Living in Houston there, Neil. So I thought it would be appropriate for us to talk a little bit about kind of the situation there in Waco, and kind of, what's your thoughts there, and kind of what are you hearing, and kind of what do you think, they should be done there? Should they allow the recruits out there, and how does this change kind of the landscape of, Power Five football?
Well, the Baylor situation is unique, and because I think that until really things started to happen over the last 2 years, I don't think anyone, at least I never did hear a lot about it, on the national level, was saying, hey, boy, the inmates may be running the asylum in Waco. You've got a troubled situation. But I think among people who really were on the inside, this problem's been brewing for about 5 or 6 years. I think when Mack Brown left the University of Texas, it would have really been logical for them to look, you know, a few, I mean, to Baylor and Art Briles. I mean, the at that point, the amount of success that he had brought to a program that really had been kind of downtrodden before he got there was pretty unprecedented. And yet what I heard was Briles wasn't ever really a serious candidate because of the program that he was developing. And at Texas, certainly they hadn't had the issues that have arisen in Waco, but they did have a bit of a country club atmosphere, and perhaps Mack Brown had become a bit more detached, and they're looking to someone to bring someone in who's more of a law and order kind of guy, and that's what they got with Charlie Strong. So I think this has been brewing for a long time in Waco, and even, I mean, I think there are a lot of instances of this, and probably a lot of reasons why we should have seen this. I mean, a guy like Sean Oakland, who, you know, as we know, not only slid through the draft, but is still unsigned, didn't even get an undrafted free agent contract because everyone knows about his character. I mean, he had serious character issues at Penn State, and yet Baylor just, you know, came, you know, rolled out the red carpet for him. So there are a lot of issues, and I think this has been coming for a long time. Now, regarding the letters of intent, I think it would be probably the right thing to do for Baylor to release them, and there are going to be a lot of players that who didn't sign who are looking around. I mean, it seems like every day there's more news of a major player that is no longer considering Baylor. But on the other hand, it's going to have major implications for the rest of that program athletically because, as you know, Justin, football pulls the plow for every sport. And that's the big money maker. And they've got, obviously, a significant stadium there they've got to pay for and a number of things that are going to really struggle now that Briles is gone and the program is somewhat in disarray. I don't know that – I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful to Jim Grove, but he doesn't have any roots or any ties to the players, and he's a bit of an unknown commodity when it comes to football in Texas and those kind of things. I mean, he – doesn't really have that record, having coached at Wake Forest and in the MAC. So they've got a real struggle there. I think unless they can perhaps name a coach who's in waiting or someone along those lines who's up next that has more of a Texas, persona and maybe is a slightly larger profile across the league, I think they're going to struggle to do that. But I don't know how you do that, given the fact that we're less than 100 days from kickoff, and they got to move forward, and they've got to, you know, try to start things. I mean, one thing I think you'll definitely see this year is every player who's got any kind of NFL interest or any kind of talent for the NFL who's in his first, you know, who's got 3 years completed is probably going to be leaving. I mean, there's going to be a mass exodus out of Baylor, I would presume. So kind of crazy what's happening, especially this close to the season. You just don't see this very often.
No, and I think the standpoint is going to be, you know, there's been talk about Mike Singletary, a Baylor alum, you know, potentially, you know, having interest in the head coaching position, which to me, that's something that, hey, if Baylor could get Singletary to come in there, that could be, you know, really, you know, helpful for them. So it's definitely interesting. But, you know, as always, you know, Neil, you know, great stuff to talk about with you and getting your insight on different things there. And, you know, as we go kind of through the summer, obviously spring grades are something that people are going to be looking for regards to, you know, recruiting is going to be starting hot and heavy regards to with agents, trainers, and financial advisors during this summer. As we, like you said, we're less than 100 days until college football kicks off. So, you know, look forward to another great week of Inside the League. And again, people check out that succeedinfootball.com blog that Neil just posted. Very interesting. And Neil, you have a great week as we kind of roll into the summer and roll into, you know, college football kicking off in the NFL right after it.
Absolutely, Justin. Good to be back. Looking forward to next week again. A lot of fun, as always.
Talk to you soon.
All right.